Good morning, Your Honors. Edwin Gagne on behalf of the petitioners. The lead petitioner is a female native and citizen of Syria who entered the U.S. in February 2002 and applied for asylum within 1 year. Her application was referred by the asylum office to the immigration court and finally denied in August 2007. Briefly, her application for asylum rested on her business activities in Syria. Primarily, she opened a plastics factory in 1999, encountered certain financial problems, and took on a business partner who was connected to the Syrian government. Soon after, she realized that he was using the facility to store and process illegal drugs. When she complained to a government official, she encountered problems. She was taken to the investigations branch and questioned about her background. She was later detained in that same month, that being December 2001. And then in January 2002, her home and business were confiscated. Now, the principal basis for denial of the asylum application by the immigration court and by the board were certain material inconsistencies in her testimony, three in particular. And we contend that there was no inconsistencies, nothing inconsistent in her statements whatsoever. The first one centered on her description of her business partner. In numerous points in the testimony, she described him. First, she described him as having a ranking with the military. When questioned if he worked for the military, she said he just had a rank with the military. And she happened to mention that he works for the government as well. Then later on, numerous times, she refers to him simply as being connected to the government. So she made the stray comment that he works for the government. But we contend that is not a meaningful issue because, first of all, there was no follow-up questions to ascertain exactly what she meant by working for the government. The government in Syria is not as it is in the West. It's a government-controlled economy. It's a family-controlled government. And, you know, the demarcation between who works for the government and who doesn't is not as clear as it would be in a Western country. So none of these issues were developed. And also, one can see throughout the transcript that there's problems with the translation. And the interpreter often mistranslated. There was one objection made about a key mistake that he made in his interpreting. So all those things taken together, I think, do not support that as a material inconsistency.
But what about the fact that in the affidavit with the asylum application or her June 6th testimony in there, I don't think there was any confusion. She doesn't mention that she was beaten. That was a big factor.
Yes, that was. That's one of the three inconsistencies. We also claim that is not meaningful. You know, if you look at where she says that in the transcript, it's actually...
She says it was the beating that supposedly prompted her to flee Syria.
In her testimony?
Yes.
You know, she doesn't really say that. She just says, in passing, she says that she was, quote, beat up. And the way that appears in the transcript, it's not something she was trying to draw attention to. It was just mentioned quickly in relating the incident that occurred. And if you look at the translation that occurred during that statement, it's really unintelligible. And so to draw on that one word that she used in the context of that statement, the way it was translated, is really unfair. And we don't know what she really said there. And what was translated as being, quote, beat up. And the words were being used very loosely there. In any event, again, that was not followed up on. She was never confronted with a possible inconsistency and given a chance to explain herself the way case law demands. I mean, she was really surprised by the judge in finding these three inconsistencies. There was no opportunity for her to rehabilitate herself. And in fact, even the government attorney at that hearing on cross-examination said he had very few questions. Because he was not even on notice that there was material inconsistencies that needed to be developed and explored. And the other inconsistency is about the cause of the dispute, whether it was based on the fact that drugs were stored there and processed, or whether it was based on her partner taking over the business. And we submit those are the same thing. If someone is using a facility to store drugs illegally against the wishes of the petitioner, then he's taken over the factory. Why are those inconsistent? And again, she was not allowed the opportunity to explain the inconsistencies. That's all I have. Thank you. Okay.
May it please the Court, Alyssa Gould on behalf of Respondent Attorney General Eric Holder. The petitioner in this case, Jamila Darwich, a businesswoman from Syria, seeks asylum based on a corrupt business partnership that she voluntarily instigated. After a full and fair hearing before an asylum officer, an immigration judge, and the Board of Immigration Appeals, the agency reasonably found Ms. Darwich not credible because of the numerous inconsistencies in her testimony and asylum application, and because she failed to present any corroborating evidence, even after she was given a 9-month continuance to do so. Furthermore, the agency reasonably concluded that even if Ms. Darwich was truthful, any issues she might have faced in Syria were the direct result of a personal dispute and did not give rise to a claim for asylum. The agency reasonably concluded that Ms. Darwich also failed to establish that she suffered past persecution or has a well-founded fear of future persecution on account of any protected ground. The record as it stands does not compel a contrary conclusion. The agency's factual findings in this case are subject to review under the substantial evidence test. That is, does the board's decision have the support of reasonable, substantial, and probative evidence on the record as a whole? Ms. Darwich's asylum claim was found by the agency to lack credibility, and again, the record does not compel a contrary conclusion. Her claim is premised on her contention that she voluntarily entered into a corrupt business partnership with an individual named Ali Diva in order to specifically use his business connections, and as a result, allegedly had problems with the Syrian government. As noted by the board, however, Ms. Darwich was unable to deliver a single, consistent account for material aspects of her claim. The agency reasonably doubted Ms. Darwich's credibility because she contradicted herself when attempting to establish Mr. Diva's identity, was inconsistent about the problem she actually had with this individual, and neglected to state, as Your Honor pointed out, in her application for asylum that she was allegedly beaten during a one-night detention, which we consider a material aspect of her claim. I'd like to point out to Your Honors that any issues with translation or with follow-up questions could have been remedied below. Indeed, Ms. Darwich was questioned by her own counsel, and any failure to follow up led to the conclusion that she wasn't credible. However, it's her burden to establish her eligibility for asylum. To review each of the three major inconsistencies in the testimony, first, Ms. Darwich was unable to establish Mr. Diva's identity. In her asylum application, she wrote that he was an Alawite and had connections with government officials. However, her testimony offered several various accounts for who this individual might have been. She first very clearly stated that he had a high-ranking position in the Syrian army and that he worked for the government. She was specifically asked to clarify at page 95 of the record, and she again stated he has a high ranking within the army. She then asserted that he had connections with government and customs officials, and indeed that's why she hired him in the first place. However, when later asked whether Mr. Diba was a government official at page 159 of the record, she testified, he doesn't have to be a minister himself, but he could be connected through family members to the government party or to the government. Then she stated that he had no government position, even though he had some influence with the government because he was the same family. In her brief and an argument before this court, Darwich...
with Mr. Gagne that the line between government employees in Syria and private individuals who may have some connection is a little blurry.
Your Honor, we would assert that there is a gulf between being a high-ranking official within the Syrian army and a private individual who may have been able to grease the wheels a little bit because he was from the same tribe or somehow related to somebody in the government. Indeed, that would be a material aspect of Ms. Darwich's claim and would substantially change the outcome of her case. However, she really never squarely addressed who Mr. Diba actually was, how or whether he might have been connected to anyone in a position of influence, or whether he had any real influence himself. Ms. Darwich also provided inconsistent testimony regarding the problems that she encountered with Mr. Diva. She first claimed that those problems were related to drugs and alleged that he might have been running heroin out of the back of her factory. However, she then said that he was running the factory and keeping the profits. Again, this would go to the heart of her claim because she can't establish what the actual interaction was between her and Mr. Deba. Finally, and as Your Honor pointed out earlier, the inconsistency between her asylum application and her testimony regarding whether or not she was beaten during detention is extremely significant. She mentioned in her statement that she was threatened by Mr. Deba and other officials. However, she specifically stated in her testimony, when questioned by her own counsel, she stated, "They beat me up." This is a significant difference between her asylum application and her oral testimony, and the omission goes straight to the heart of her claim. Additionally, in light of all of the inconsistencies in the record and in her testimony, the immigration judge reasonably requested corroboration from Ms. Darwich. She presented, however, no credible objective evidence corroborating her claim, even though she was given ample opportunity to do so. Specifically, she was given by the immigration judge a 9-month continuance to allow her to obtain any corroborating evidence, such as proof that she owned a home in Syria, proof that she owned a factory or plastics machinery, proof that her property was seized, proof that Mr. Deba was her business partner, that he ever existed, etc. However, Ms. Darwich failed to produce any such evidence, leaving the court with scant corroboration of her claims. When asked why she could not produce evidence from Syria, she testified that she was afraid to bring with her anything that might implicate her when she was trying to leave the country. However, this doesn't explain why she was unable, especially during that 9-month period, to attain affidavits, leases, receipts from her business, anything that would establish her claims. Furthermore, it doesn't explain why her husband, who was present with her in Syria during at least part of what she was experiencing and was present in the courtroom in the United States, did not testify on her behalf. Furthermore, even if this court concluded that Ms. Darwich was credible, she failed to establish that she suffered past persecution or is a well-founded fear of future persecution on account of any protected ground. First, Ms. Darwich suffered no past persecution in Syria. The alleged seizure of her business equipment and house would not compel a finding that she suffered economic hardship rising to the level of past persecution. While economic hardship might compel a finding of persecution, this court has established that to do so, the applicant must demonstrate economic persecution, meaning a probability of deliberate imposition of substantial economic disadvantage. Ms. Darwich did not meet this standard. She was in the plastics business allegedly for less than 2 years. She testified that during her hearing that her business was suffering even before she brought Mr. Deba in as a business partner. She worked in the fashion industry before opening her factory and was able to save up enough money to purchase all of her equipment outright. She didn't testify that there was any reason she could not go back to the fashion industry. She didn't testify that the Syrian government told her she would be barred from future employment in Syria, and she did not testify that she would have no way to support herself there. Furthermore, any harm that she might have suffered was not on account of any protected ground. She argued in her brief before this court that she suffered persecution in Syria because she's a Syrian Christian woman. However, there's no evidence in the record to demonstrate that Christians face systemic persecution in Syria, nor is there any evidence in the record that women business owners face systemic persecution in Syria. Indeed, before she met Mr. Deba, she was able to work to save up a lot of money and to open a factory independent of her husband. Furthermore, she argues that she suffered past persecution on account of her political opinion or an imputed political opinion. However, this court has defined political opinion as one that is expressed through political activities or through some sort of speech in the political arena. Again, Ms. Darwich failed to meet this standard. She voluntarily brought an allegedly corrupt businessman into her business. She then complained when he began to take over, demonstrating that theirs was merely a personal dispute. Finally, there's no evidence that the Syrian government, or someone the government cannot or will not control, was motivated by the desire to suppress any alleged political opinion. And finally, Ms. Darwich failed to meet her burden to demonstrate a well-founded fear of future persecution. She didn't address the issue of well-founded fear of future persecution in her brief or her testimony, other than to vaguely assert that Syria is a generally repressive country with a poor human rights situation. However, there's no evidence in the record that the government of Syria or individuals that the government could not or will not control would be interested or even aware of her potential return to Syria. Furthermore, she didn't demonstrate that a reasonable person in her circumstances would fear persecution. In sum, the record does not compel the conclusion that Ms. Darwich testified credibly or that she suffered past persecution or has a well-founded fear of future persecution.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Okay. First of all, we object to the characterization that the petitioner entered into a voluntary relationship with a corrupt business person. She didn't know he was corrupt at the time the time he became her partner.
She voluntarily entered into the agreement. Whether or not she knew he was corrupt was neither here nor there.
Although I thought she was saying that she knew he was corrupt at the time they went.
I didn't take it that way.
Okay. All right. That's fine then. Then regarding the issue of past persecution, we would certainly contend that having your property seized, your home and business seized, being detained, being threatened, would amount to past persecution. Where someone cannot earn a living, that constitutes economic deprivation and has been held to be past persecution. And regarding the inconsistencies, the problem with them is that they infected the entire proceeding. That once the court, resolved that she was inconsistent, was not credible, then she had no right to a fair hearing. And we just contend that the proper procedure was not followed in that regard. The inconsistency should have been brought to the attention of the direct attention of the respondent so that she could respond directly and not be surprised at the oral decision.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.